Hello everyone, and welcome to J Talk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and joining me this week to review Match Day 33 of J2 is my regular partner in crime, John Steele. Hi John, how are you?
Hi James, very good, thanks. I can say good morning this time, yeah. which is quite rare, so let's enjoy recording at a sensible time this week.
Yeah, it feels strange, but hopefully we'll get used to it by the end of the recording at least. All right, let's get stuck in, shall we? We've got three quite interesting games to talk about this week. And the first one was Vegalta Sendai welcoming Jeff United to the Yurtec Stadium. Jeff started quite strongly in this one. Keita Buanica headed over, just 30 seconds on the clock. Sendai's best chance of the first half was Motohiko Nakashima, who hit the post on 25 minutes. And in the second half, Jeff scored two goals. In the 55th minute, a corner found Ikki Arai free at the back post, and his shot, I think, was deflected in. That's his seventh goal of the season. He's actually the leader for Jeff. And then about 20 minutes later, a long throw was headed on by Solomon Sakuragawa to Tomoya Miki, who shot in from 12 yards, and it finished Sendai 0, Jeff 2. Now, John, you might recall last week, somebody on the pod said that they thought Jeff might cause Sendai some problems. I can't remember who it was, but
me neither.
That person. And what did you make of this game?
Well, I'm wrong usually when making predictions, so allow me to just revel briefly in this successful one. Yeah, I think Sendai might have blown their automatic promotion chances here. Mm. Because this is three defeats in a row for them, isn't it? They're 10 points adrift of the all-important top two with nine games left. Now, that's not an unassailable lead, especially not by J2 standards, but I don't think Sendai at the moment are showing any signs of bridging that gap. So, yeah, 10 points behind with nine games left. It looks like automatic promotion is the chances are very faint now, aren't they? I think on Sendai generally, just before we talk about this game, they just concede way too many goals, don't they? Especially quite soft ones. I believe they've conceded 46, which is the worst in the top half of the table. So it's not hard to see where their weak point is. So yeah, I think the playoffs look like the most likely promotion route for them. I also had a quick look at their fixtures coming up. They still have to go away to Niigata, Okayama and Oita. So it's hard to see them, bridging a 10-point gap to the top two with that schedule. For this game in particular, I thought in the first half, Sendai had some good chances, as you'd expect from the home team. And you mentioned that effort from, Motohiko Nakajima. Sort of kind of hard to describe it, but he kind of seemed to just drift the ball against the kind of angle of the bar and post from about 30 yards. That would have been a fantastic goal if it had gone in, and it might have changed the complexion of the game. But I think you mentioned the two goals that Jeff scored in the second half. Jeff were doing what they were good at, and they forced Sendai to do what they're bad at, and that's defend set plays. So for the first goal, it was a corner from Taishi Taguchi that kind of got flicked on or ended up at the back post, and Ikki Arai was free. I think he's been out injured for about 3 weeks, so I'm sure he was delighted to get a chance to put a shot on goal, and you were right. I think there was a slight deflection that took it into the net. But if you watch the replay, there are about eight Sendai players in the six-yard box, but none of them are in the right place or none of them are able to react. So it's not as if they didn't have players back defending, but they didn't have players reacting in the right way or positioned correctly to do anything about the goal. And for the second goal, it's very similar. It's a long throw from Shunsuke Nishikubo. Again, Sendai have got loads of players back in the penalty area to defend, but none of them or not enough of them are reacting correctly or predicting where the ball's going to go. And Solomon Sakuragawa got the flick on, and Tomiya Miki was able to just sweep it under the goalkeeper, Yuma Obata. So yeah, I think we saw Sendai's kind of defensive frailties exposed quite ruthlessly by Jeff here. And that's why I think they're probably heading for the playoffs and not automatic promotion. For Jeff, this was a kind of, we mainly focused on Sendai in the analysis, but Jeff played pretty well. This was a quite good sort of smash and grab and clean sheet for them. Now they're 10th. But they're three games unbeaten, and they're only a few points off the top six. So I don't think it is going to happen for them this year, but they're not quite out of the playoff chase, are they? I don't know, James, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree with that, with all of what you just said. I think Jeff they took their few chances. They didn't have many, but the ones that they did make, they took pretty much, and from set pieces. And again, it seemed like they'd watched said their previous matches, and they knew they had to try and get there early. That's why they created that good chance quite in the first minute, which unfortunately Buenica headed over. But then from the highlights, it seemed like Sendai had loads of free kicks near the Jeff area, and they were direct free kicks. They either went just over or they went straight to Shota Arai in goal. Fairly comfortable saves. So it seems like they wasted a lot of chances, and yeah, the defense was just all over the place. Where set pieces are surely the thing that you practice the most defending. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows where they've got to be and who they've got to pick up. So there's no excuse for not doing that. I say that as a supporter of a team that concedes a lot from set pieces. There's no excuse for it. You should know what you're doing, and you should be able to do it as professional footballers. But yeah, Jeff took advantage of that, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. And actually, I found out quite an interesting little fact about this fixture. Sendai and Jeff have played six times ever, and Jeff have won all six games. So I thought it was quite interesting. And now only 3 points off sixth, Jeff. I think, it's not impossible, but I don't think they have enough consistency to get into the top six. I think I might have said this a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Their last five games, two wins, two draws and a loss, is pretty good for like ninth or tenth, and they're in tenth. But I don't think that they will be able to kind of overhaul Machida, Oita, Nagasaki and Yamagata to make that final spot.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, I think this was interesting, and I agree that, I mean, I thought last week that Sendai had blown their top two chances, and this just confirms it for me. I think they've really, they've come into a bad run at the worst time. And I don't think that they'll be able to make up those, now it's 10 points to Niigata, who are unbeaten in God knows how many games, and have won their last three, and also Yokohama FC are 11 points ahead of them and have won their last three. So, and now Sendai are only a point ahead of Okayama. And by the time this pod goes online, Okayama might have played their Wednesday night rematch with Yamagata, and they might even have moved up into third. So Sendai might have dropped down to fourth.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I think that will be a blow for Sendai as well, like psychologically, to have been in that top three group for so long, and for then to drop to fourth. It's only one place, but I think it could be quite a big thing for them, a big disappointment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of wonder, once you resign yourself to finishing in the playoff zone rather than the top two, do you want to finish third? Because, you know, like we've discussed previously, third place teams tend to blow the playoffs quite often, don't they? So yeah. I wonder if you might find if Okayama and Sendai realize they're heading for the playoffs and not the top two, will they be kind of out losing each other in the last 2 months to try and make sure they don't finish third?
Yeah, but at least in the J2 system, the third and fourth teams get the home fixture right, and then they don't have to win their playoff matches, do they? They only have to draw. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it might be that this Sendai's losing run continues and they end up finishing lower than fourth. Who knows? It's possible.
Mm. Mm.
All right, let's move on. We just mentioned Okayama. Now we're going to talk about their trip to Gunma. This one finished Gunma 0, Okayama 1. And in the 29th minute, Gunma keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki was quite a long way outside his area, and for some reason did a perfect pass straight to Okayama striker Mitchell Duke, who had a simple lob into an empty net from about 30 yards. That was the only goal of the game. Kushibiki did make a few good saves, but it wasn't enough, and Okayama moved to within a point of Sendai. John, what did you think about this game?
Mm, Yeah, I think this was a really, really important win for Okayama because they'd lost the previous week away at Yokohama FC, and they'd lost their kind of long unbeaten run. You know, we often say if you're on a long unbeaten run and then you lose a game, it's important to bounce back straight away. So I think it was crucial that they did that here. They had Yasutaka Yanagi back from his suspension at centre-back, and I think that was a huge boost for them. He's obviously a very important player. And, yeah, I wanted to highlight from the first half especially, Mitch Duke, who was just excellent. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen him be less than good for Okayama. I'm still sort of the opinion he could probably do a job in J1. So, it's quite a good get for Okayama to have him up front in J2. And I think at times in the first half, this game became a kind of personal duel between him and Kushibiki, didn't it, in the Grimma goal. I think there was a really good snapshot from Duke that Kushibiki saved, and then there was a header later on in the first half, which you can actually see Duke, if you lip read, is like, how has he saved that? When he turns away in disgust. So that was a kind of really good individual battle between those two. But in between those two fine saves from Kushibiki, there was the crucial moment where he receives the ball, Kushibiki, and he scans the field under very little pressure, and then for some reason just passes the ball straight to Duke. I'm not even sure who he was trying to pass to on the Gunma team. It was obviously the wrong option or the wrong ball, and Duke inflicted the maximum punishment, didn't he? Just kind of clipped the ball over him and into the net from about 30 yards, as you said. So horrible mistake from Kushibiki. Like we were discussing, tweeting each other, James, perhaps it's he's not wearing his Spanx these days.
Yeah.
You know, his Lycra compression trousers. So perhaps that is the, like Samson's hair, that might be the source of his power. I don't know. We'll be interesting to see. We'll keep an eye on the Spanx if they come back next week. But I thought in the second half, Okayama did something which Yokohama FC did to them for the sort of the tail end of the game last week, which is basically park the bus and grind out the win. I think Gunma are not the most dynamic team when they're attacking, and I think Okayama were able to fairly smoothly keep them at arm's length and grind out the win. So good win for Okayama. As you mentioned, they're just a single point behind Sendai now in fourth, and I've put in my notes, I think Okayama might be a better side overall, actually. And for Gunma, they had that stunning win at Yamagata last weekend. They've not been able to build on that here. So they're level on points with Iwate, aren't they, at the bottom. I think Gunma's weak point, it's not hard to see, they've scored the fewest goals in the league on 24. So with a record like that, if they do survive, it's only going to be by the skin of their teeth, you have to feel. But they're level on points with Iwate, but they have a much better goal difference, don't they? Gunma on minus 17 versus Iwate on minus 31. And I also had a quick look ahead to Gunma's fixtures that they've got coming up in the run-in. Well, they've got Tochigi, Ryukyu, Akita and Yamaguchi in September, and then in October they still have to play Omiya and Iwate. So that looks like a pretty favourable run-in to me, especially all of these games against kind of rivals around the table. They're all at home except the game at Akita. They have to go to Akita, but all of those other kind of relegation dogfighty looking games are all going to be at Shoda Stadium in Gunma. So I sort of fancy them to just about survive by the skin of their teeth, even after losing this game. I don't know what you think, James.
Oh, I hadn't checked that schedule, but that is a very interesting final 6 weeks of the season or whatever, final month or two of the season. I didn't realise they were playing all of those teams around them. I think, a couple of wins or a few draws from those matches and they'll be very happy. I mean, I noticed that they were playing Tochigi coming up this week, and that was a pretty big one. That's really interesting. I think from this game, I think this was a massive letdown from Gunma after how good they were last week against Sendai. As I said last week, winning one's not enough. We've got to build on it, and they didn't do that. They hardly created anything going forward. And when you've got the weakest attack in the league, you can't gift your opponent goals like Kushibiki did here. And they did that against Jeff a few weeks ago.
Oh, against Yokohama FC as well, yeah.
or a third minute of Jeff Leggett, because Kushibiki came out and Kazuma got in front of him and scored into an empty goal. We can't, and Kushibiki's not a bad goalie. He still makes a lot of good saves, but his form has dipped significantly from the first half of the season, when he was one of the top performers, I think one of the top performing goalkeepers in the league. And yeah, like you said, Okayama parked the bus. I think if there's one team that you can rely on to do an effective job of parking the bus, it's Okayama. They've got such a good defence with Yanagi and Jordi Boyce alongside as centre-backs. That partnership's incredible. They've got a very good defensive record. And the fact that they're not such high scorers isn't really a problem because the defence is so good. And that means they are able to... they didn't have Thiago Alves in the squad for this game. And I don't know why that was, but they can still rely on Mitch Duke to do the business, because I think he could do a job in J1. So I think Okayama were not troubled here, and they're doing pretty well. I think they've bounced back from that loss the previous week, and they're looking good. I don't think they'll have any major problems for the rest of the season. I think they'll be steadily going along in the playoffs, as they have been for most of this year. Gunma, it's worrying, isn't it? Because they can't score, really. But I guess, that kind of fixture list that you mentioned, it could work either way. I mean, they could look at those and think, these are all games that we've got a chance, we can win these and get ourselves towards safety and drag the other teams deeper into trouble. But on the other hand, if the first few games or the first couple of games of that nature don't go well, we'll have a negative effect, I think it could, and pile the pressure on as they get closer to the end of the season. So, I think be keeping an eye on Gunma for the next.
I think Gunma's biggest problem is they just have to, if they go behind, they have to be able to react a bit more than what they have done recently. Whereas if it's like a sudden death match, isn't it? If they concede a goal, then they're kind of done. And they can't get back into the game. They need to work on that. Otherwise, they could end up losing all these very favourable fixtures. They might lose them all 1-0, and they're really in trouble.
Although I will say, I do think that young Nagakura looked pretty lively for them. He scored the goal against Sendai previous week. He seems like quite a hard worker, trying to get himself into good positions. I think he had one good chance in this game, but
that chance he showed a little bit of inexperience, though, for me with that chance. I know the one that you're thinking of, and he should have used his left foot. He tried. He's obviously a right-footed player, so he cut inside onto his left foot, but he then tried to shoot on goal with his right, which was the wrong body shape was all wrong to generate kind of the power and the direction. So I think. He's an eager, hard worker, but I think Gunma do have quite good, like, second strikers, but they don't have any goal scorers. They have a lot of good forwards who would be really good foils for, like, a kind of target man, like a Brenner-type player, for example, or someone like Saddam Sule at Ryukyu. If you drop them into Gunma's team, I think a lot of their goal scoring problems would be alleviated, but they do have these kind of sort of, like, nippy... edge of the box strikers who are good at creating chances for others, but they're lacking a finisher. So I think hopefully he uses his left foot next time.
All right, let's move on to our third game, shall we? This was Banfrey Kofu against Zergin Kanazawa. With 4 minutes on the clock, there was a shock as Kanazawa took the lead. A skillful turn by Kazuya Onohara, a one-touch pass from Sho Hiramatsu, and a deflected shot by Hiroya Matsumoto. The lead lasted 2 minutes. Kofu had a free kick that was not fully cleared, and they recycled the play. Then a long pass from Motoki Hasegawa found Yoshiki Torikai in the area, and he turned past the sliding Taiga Son and scored. Then, in the 66th minute, Kofu went ahead. Sho Araki put in a deep cross from the left, and Kazushi Mitsuhira volleyed in. That was a very impressive finish. But Kanazawa came back again, which they haven't done for quite a long time. And they made it 2-2 in the 80th minute. Three subs were involved in this one. Takayuki Takayasu, Shunya Mori, and Kyohei Sugiura. Mori found Takayasu in space on the right. He passed to Onohara, who crossed. Sugiura headed for Masamichi Hayashi, who found space right in front of goal, beat the offside trap and scored. But that was not the end of the drama. With 86 minutes on the clock, Mitsuhiro was alone, 6 yards out. He had a shot saved and he hit the post, and the rebound was frantically cleared by Kanazawa. And in the final touch of the game, Kanazawa had a counter-attack. Kyohei Sugiura took it down the right into the penalty box. He had Naoki still waiting. He tried, I'm not sure if he was trying to shoot or cross. He got caught in two minds and he scooped it high and wide. So it finished Kofu 2, Kanazawa 2. A very exciting match. John,
I think we always like to finish the sort of pick of the week segment with a more sort of traditional J2 match, don't we? Like, we've talked about two sort of very professional and orderly away wins with clean sheets so far. So we did good to finish with a 2-2, ding dong, as it were. Yeah, I thought this was a really entertaining game, especially the opening 10 minutes, which was as frenetic as you like, wasn't it? That early goal for Kanazawa, and then Kofu coming back just 2 minutes after that. And then I think it was about the 10th minute when Shirai made an absolutely brilliant point-blank save, didn't he? And Kanazawa, I think, for the rest of the first half, they were just kind of holding on to that 1-1 scoreline pretty much, or at least it looked that way on the highlights. And then, yeah, Mitsuhiro, really, really good goal from him midway through the second half to put Kofu in front. His hair just shows no signs of calming down, does it? He's got the kind of... I don't know what you'd call it, sort of hairband, do-rag, and then this kind of, I don't know, it's like a sort of unruly afro almost that he's got going on. I don't know. Let's move on, because I don't know the right vocabulary for talking about hair.
It has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah, I'm just not sure. Like, he's leaning into it, which I think is good. Like, I don't think he thinks it looks... I think he realised it looks quite comical. I think his goal celebration was kind of, you know, incorporating his hairstyle or is Barnett. So I don't know, be interested to see where that goes from here. if it will, are there any laws of the game about, you know, height of hair that could be potentially be breached? I don't know, but you mentioned Kanazawa. I think they deserved a point overall, and they got one with that well-worked goal in the 81st minute. Kyohei Sugiura did brilliantly to head the ball down to Hayashi to score from close range. And then, yeah, there was that excitement at the other end when, again, Shirai did really well to save from Mitsuhiro at point-blank range, and then Mitsuhiro hit the post. And then Sugiura, you know, he showed all that composure and intelligence to set up Hayashi for the equaliser, James. And then in that 94th minute breakaway, it's kind of shades of a Yuji Senuma last season, striding up the pitch. And then... time seemed to stand still, didn't it, as Sugiura got into the penalty. It's like, oh, is he going to pick out this player? Is he going to go to the far post? Is he going to shoot himself? And then what actually happened was just like a, you know, wrong button on FIFA situation. And actually, if they on the DAZN highlights, it cut to the manager, Yanagishita, who's just on his hands and knees in the technical area. And I think that's the only correct reaction, isn't it, when that happens. I'm not really sure what Sugiura was... what he was trying to achieve there, but what a waste of a golden chance. But yeah, 2-2 at the full time, exciting stuff. That leaves Kofu 7 points outside the playoffs, doesn't it? But I don't think it's going to happen for them this year. I note with interest they've drawn 15 matches this season, Kofu, which in my notes I've said that makes them a pound shop Tokushima. I think Tokushima are on 20 draws and Kofu are on 15, so both sides would benefit from a few more goals and a few more wins, wouldn't they, this year. For Kanazawa, I think that's the end of, is that a 5-game losing streak that they've snapped now? But they're 17th in the table, 6 points clear of the drop zone, which I think is okay. But as I'm sure you'll mention, James, they're not out of the woods just yet, are they?
No, absolutely not. But this was much more promising than any of the previous 6 games, the 5 losses and the 1-1 draw against Mito, where we played terribly. There are still problems defensively, still shaky, particularly at centre back, because we have Honoya Shoji, who played very well in this game, and he dealt really well with Willian Lira, and he also had to cover a lot of Taiga Son's errors. He's very inexperienced and still finds himself, I don't know, caught out of position or switching off at the wrong time.
He gets moved around too much, doesn't he, I think.
And so he was the covering defender for both of the goals, and he has been involved in a lot of the goals in that losing run, and so he's learning on the job, which is hard for him. It's also hard for his teammates. But apart from that, I think there were good performances all over the pitch. We were missing Keita Fujimura in central midfield. Shintaro Shimada usually plays on the wing, and Yohei Toyoda, the striker, who were all suspended because of accumulated yellow cards. But we didn't miss any of them. We had in central midfield Hiroya Matsumoto and Kazuya Onohara. And Onohara he played the key pass in both of the goals. So I think he took a lot of responsibility in Fujimura's absence. So I was really pleased for him. And on the wing, we had Ryuhei Oishi, who has been mostly coming off the bench this year and has had pretty good performances as a sub. But in this match, he was working hard at both ends of the pitch. He was making tackles in his own area. He hit the post at one point. He was creating chances as well. He was so much more effective than Shimada has been all year. So I was very pleased for him as well. What else? Shirai. The classic Shirai. He made, I think, three outstanding saves in the first half alone, plus a couple of other pretty good saves. And then again in the second half, he made a few more really good saves. He was on fire. If he hadn't been, then it would have been a lot worse. It would have been another 4-1 to add to the collection. And yeah, well, Kanazawa scored first for the first time in seven games. Scored more than one for the first time in seven games. This was the best defensive effort in terms of goals conceded for seven games. Basically, the best game since the 2-1 win over Gunma in early July. Since then, it was all dreadful. So yeah, the losing streaks ended at five, so it's party time in Kanazawa, but we're still winless in seven. We've got to wonder, is this game going to be seen as the turning point, or is it just going to be another game in a long winless streak that ends in J3? I don't know, and I think partly that would depend on how things go against Tokyo Verdy this coming weekend. And how Yanagishita brings Fujimura, Shimada and Yohei back into the squad and into the team. Because I think if he puts Shimada back on the wing in place of Hiramatsu or Oishi, that will be a bad decision. And also, I know he likes Fujimura a lot. Fujimura's a good player and he's kind of seen as the heartbeat of the team. But Onohara was involved in both goals. Hiramatsu scored one of them. He scored in the previous game as well. So I'm not really sure which of those you'd drop. And Matsumoto has played as left winger as well with Fujimura and Onohara in the centre, but I don't think he works very well as a left winger. So I'm not sure what he's going to do with them. That will be interesting to see. In terms of Kofu, I think in this game, their finishing let them down. Like, it's a Shirai made so many good saves. But Torikai was particularly effective, I thought. He always seemed to be in plenty of space. And I don't know if that's because he's one of those players that makes it look like he's in lots of space, or if it was that Kanazawa were just giving him lots of space. It was probably a bit of both, but he was very effective and his goal was very well taken. And also Araki on the left, he was pretty dangerous. He was involved in a lot of good moves. So I think I agree with you that it's too much for them to make up the 7 points to the playoffs. But they are unbeaten in eight league games and nine including the cup. So, yeah, it's the same as Tokushima, isn't it? They've not managed to turn enough of those draws into wins. So I think this will be looked on as a disappointing season for them.
I think for me, it's like there's Kofu, Tokushima and Oita who are all kind of coming into form in the running, aren't they? And it's quite interesting. You can imagine, perhaps we'll talk a little bit about Oita in a moment when we talk about the weekend games coming up. Oita still in with a pretty good chance of making the playoffs, I think. I think Tokushima and Kofu left themselves a bit too much to do. But I think it'll be interesting to see, in some ways, it possibly counterproductive to be, if you're not going to make the playoffs, it might be counterproductive to be too impressive in the last 2 months of the season, because then you're going to perhaps run the risk of having your impressive players being picked off you know, for the following year. Like, I think Kofu, Motoki Hasegawa has been the standout player this season, hasn't he? It's hard to imagine him being there next season, although I suppose it's not impossible. You picked up Yoshiki Torikai from this game. I think he's been impressive in patch as well. I also really like Hidehiro Sugai, who he was unfortunate. I think the for Kanazawa's opening goal, the ball deflected off him and into the net, so he wasn't his best game at the weekend, but he's been impressive in patches. I think that's true of a lot of Kofu players, they've been impressive in patches this year. Without really being well, until now they haven't been consistent enough to kind of mount a challenge for the top six. So yeah, I wonder what the season I wonder what the rest of the season holds for them, but yes, I agree with you. I think they're too far behind in terms of the playoffs, and I'd be interesting, there are one or two players will be very interesting to see where they end up playing their football next season, I think. And I'm also curious about the fate of the manager as well, because I think if they end up finishing are they about 12th now or a bit higher, maybe, I don't know.
13th.
Yeah, well, I wonder if that is considered acceptable for Kofu, or whether that will lead to managerial change if they're still kind of mid-table or even in the bottom half at the end of the season. But we wait to see. James, on Kanazawa, I know you're the host this week, so I'm overstepping boundaries here. But with Masaki Yanagishita, are you of the opinion that if they stay up this year, as looks likely, he'll carry on, or would you like to see a change in the hot seat regardless of that? Because it doesn't seem as though they have made massive, I'm on the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like they've made massive progress from last season. I did have a quick look. I think after 32 rounds last season, they had 30 points. So they're on 36 this year. So maths is my weak point, but they're 6 points better off than the same stage last year. That's good. But they also don't seem to have made massive strides in terms of league placing or results-wise or performance-wise. I don't know if that's a bit harsh, but would you like to see a managerial change this winter, or is that it? Would you prefer to no comment at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't want to. You know, I'm not going to wish for anyone to lose their job, because it's obviously a very unpleasant experience. But I think
he'd be all right. He'd be all right.
Yeah. Well, but I think probably he's done all he can do. I think he's taken the club as far as he can. I think we've seen over the last three seasons, the second half of the season has been very, very bad. The first 3 years were excellent. There was improvement every year. The first half of 2020 was pretty good. The second half was bad. There was a long winless run. 2021, we were up in third at one point and then just plummeted. And there was that 13-game winless run. There were some good performances in patches within that run, but and we were not just losing all of those games. We were drawing some as well, but it didn't look like it was ever going to end. Same as this year. We were not as high-flying as last year, but we're going pretty well in sort of 9th or 10th. And then suddenly we went on this inexplicable 5-game losing streak. And not just any old losing streak, but a losing streak where we were hemorrhaging goals, which hopefully has finished. But, yeah, well, like we said before, we're not out of the woods yet. And I think what we've seen over the last few years is that once we're a streaky team, and once we get onto a losing streak, he doesn't seem to know how to end it, and it just drags on. And I think this year we brought in Kiyokazu Kudo to be an assistant manager or you know, coach, sort of to help Yanagishita tactically, and we have seen some more tactical flexibility in terms of formation, in terms of gameplay, and also in terms of substitutions, when they're made and how many are made and who is involved. But it hasn't made that much difference, and we changed a lot of the players in the off season, but we still have the same problem. And what's the common factor in all of this? It's the manager. So I wouldn't be surprised if he stays, because I think the club will value that stability. But on the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes, because last year and this year, I don't think we're good enough. And I understand that we have one of the lowest budgets in the league. We have among the lowest crowds. And I believe we have generally financially we're one of the smaller clubs. We're way out of the way, so it's very hard to attract spectators and also players and also probably coaches and managers. But I think it might be time for a change. But I'm not desperate to get rid of him, so I mean, I don't really know. Does that answer your question?
Furious Kanazawa supporter. No, I'm just kidding. I was just thinking how I could twist it on Twitter. But no, I think that's very fair. And I think it's not fair to ask you that with, 9 or 10 games of the season left. I think it's probably a conversation to have in late November, isn't it?
Okay. Well, on that note then, let's end part one there. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back in a moment to round up the rest of the weekend's action. Let's review the rest of the weekend's games. There were two postponements due to COVID, Omiya against Yamagata and Nagasaki against Tochigi. While Yokohama FC maintained their place at the top of the table with a 1-0 win away to Machida Zelvia. Vinicius Araujo almost put the hosts in front early on when his shot from the edge of the area beat Sven Brodersen, hit the bar twice and bounced away. It was a late goal that did for Machida. A long pass from Gabriel for Marcelo Hien to run onto and square for Ryoya Yamashita to tap in. Machida are sixth on 49 points, while Yokohama are a point ahead of Albirex Niigata, who won 2-0 away to Iwate Gruja Morioka. All the action came in the second half of this one. In the 48th minute, Iwate's Yohei Okuyama was tripped in the penalty area by Daichi Tagami. Morelato stepped up to take the penalty, but it was saved fairly comfortably by Ryosuke Kojima. Niigata then worked their way upfield, and Ryotaro Ito curled a shot into the top corner to compound Iwate's misery. And it was 2-0 on the hour when Niigata countered from an Iwate corner, and Ito laid the ball off for Yoshiaki Takagi to fire past Taishi Brandon Nozawa. Iwate stay in 21st, level on points with Gunma in 20th, but only a point ahead of Ryukyu. FC Ryukyu welcomed Saram Sule back to their starting 11 for their trip to Mito Hollyhock, but lost fellow striker Takuma Abe to injury in first half stoppage time. Ryukyu keeper Danny Carvajal continued his excellent form with good saves from Naoki Tsubaki, Ryosuke Maeda and Kosuke Kinoshita all in the first half. Sule got free at the back post for a header from a free kick in the second half, but Louis Yamaguchi got down well to save and Sule shot wide later on. Both teams struggled to hit the target in this one and it ended goalless. Ryukyu are now unbeaten in 3, Mito are 12th, 6 points off the playoffs, with just one loss in the last 8 games. Ruaso Kumamoto got back to winning ways on Sunday night with a 1-0 home victory over Tokyo Verdy. Shuhei Kamimura got the goal just before half-time, a low shot from the edge of the area. The win came at a cost for Kumamoto though, as their striker Toshiki Takahashi was stretched off after colliding with Verdy keeper Mateus in the 63rd minute. Verdy haven't scored in 4 games, and such was their lack of attacking impact, I thought the DAZN highlights were like those club-produced ones that only show one team's highlights. It was all Kumamoto. They dropped to 14th, 1 win in their last 6, 8 points off the playoffs, while Kumamoto move up to 5th on 51 points. Oita Trinita moved level on points with Machida Zelvia, thanks to a calamitous piece of goalkeeping by Blaublitz Akita's keeper Yudai Tanaka in the 3rd minute of their game. Tangaka came 30 yards out of goal to attempt a clearance that one of the two covering defenders could have dealt with and sliced it straight to Oita striker Samuel, who shot into the unguarded goal. In the second half, Oita goalie Shun Yoshida saved well from a close-range Naoki Inoue header and a Taira Shige shot from the edge of the area. Oita looked to be timing a playoff run perfectly. Akita are not out of the woods yet. 16th on 36 points, 6 clear of relegation. And a stunning result in the remaining weekend game as draw specialists Tokushima Vortis made it consecutive wins for only the third time this season with a 2-1 win against Reno for Yamaguchi. El Sino put Vortis in front in the 28th minute, a direct free kick right on the edge of the area that he put into the bottom right corner. Yamaguchi equalised with a free kick of their own in the 65th minute, Kazuma Takai into the top right corner from about 30 yards. Tokushima pushed forward and got the winner with 94 minutes and 5 seconds on the clock, a corner that they were allowed to take at the end, flicked on at the near post by Kaka and headed in at the back post by Kohei Uchida.
Yamaguchi dropped to 18th with 35 points, just 5 above Iwate. Tokushima keep their slim playoff hopes alive. They're 11th, 5 points behind 6th. Have we seen the end of their travelling avant-garde performance art review? That's all of the weekend games done, but on Wednesday the 31st, we had the final 79 minutes of the Round 8 fixture between Montedio Yamagata and Fagiano Okayama, which had been annulled and rearranged after much confusion and delay, as they say on the island of Sodor, over the rules on goalkeepers handling backpasses. The match restarted with an indirect Okayama free kick 6 yards from the Yamagata goal. 11 Yamagata players were standing on the goal line, 9 Okayama men around the ball. After plenty of dummies and a couple of false starts, Jordi Bois smashed it through the crowd for 1-0. Shuto Kawai had the ball in the net for Yamagata 4 minutes later, but he was offside and it was disallowed. Han Ae-gwon and Stefan Mork both hit the post for Okayama in the first half, while at the other end, Daiki Hotta made acrobatic saves from Yudai Konishi and De La Torre. Then, in second half stoppage time, Han made it 2-0 to Okayama when he was gifted an open goal, thanks to a misplaced pass by Taiju Yoshida. This win sees Okayama move above Sendai into third. Yamagata are ninth, 3 points off the playoffs, with a game in hand. So that's all of the games rounded up. Stay tuned for the Round 34 preview with John in just a moment.
Welcome back, everyone. John's here again, and he's going to help me take a look at the coming weekend's fixtures. As Match Day 34 takes place on Saturday the 3rd and Sunday the 4th of September. Things get underway at 6 o'clock on Saturday. There's Jeff against Nagasaki, Niigata against Oita, and at 6:30, Ryukyu play Akita. John, any of those fixtures stand out for you?
Yeah, to be honest, I think we're still at the stage of the season where every game at this point has something riding on it, doesn't it? I think Niigata against Oita, Oita are seventh and have been going really well recently. I think they're on quite a long unbeaten run, if I'm not mistaken. And obviously going away to Niigata is a huge test. Not many teams come away from the Big Swan with any points. So I think Niigata, Oita could be interesting. Nagasaki, they've kind of been under the radar a little bit, obviously having postponements because of COVID in the last couple of weeks. So I think their away game at Chiba is also huge because, as we mentioned, Jeff, they're not kind of in the playoff discussion in a heavyweight sense, but they're only 3 points off. If they could win that game against Nagasaki, then suddenly it just really opens up that kind of top six battle even more. And at 6:30, yeah, Ryukyu against Akita is going to be, it's going to be big boy football, isn't it? Because Ryukyu are at the stage where we've given them praise for how well they've played and how they've been transformed under the new manager, but they're still bottom and they need wins. And Akita are the kind of team where they have had wobbles in recent weeks, but they're quite a rugged and durable opponent usually, aren't they? So I think Ryukyu against Akita, that's going to be an interesting clash of styles where I think Ryukyu really have to go for the win. And I think Akita will probably try and park the bus. And it'll be interesting to see which of those philosophies comes out on top, I think.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Oita up to their seventh. They're equal on points with Machida in sixth. They've very stealthily worked their way up there. Hadn't noticed that, and they did lose the other night, didn't they? But they've either side of that, they've been on a beaten run. So they're doing pretty well, I think. Recovered from that, was it their March schedule was particularly heavy? I think they finally get into grips with things and maybe hitting form at the right time. At 7 o'clock, then 5 games starting. There's Sendai against Mito, Yamagata against Iwate, Kanazawa play Tokyo Verdy, Yamaguchi play Yokohama FC, and Tokushima take on Kofu. John, what do you think about those matches?
Yeah, I think we have to put focus on Sendai again, because at home to Mito, you know, third place versus 12th, that's not too dissimilar to third place against 10th, which is what they had last week when they hosted Jeff. And that obviously went very badly and ended in a third straight defeat. So the pressure on Sendai is just ramped up a little bit more. And keep in mind as well, you know, they might have dropped down to fourth if Okayama win the game in hand, as you've mentioned already on Wednesday. So I think Sendai under quite a lot of pressure to perform well in that game. Yamagata against Iwate, I think as well, Yamagata need the points to kind of maintain their soft charge towards the playoffs, we could say. Iwate really are getting to the last chance saloon now, I think, down at the bottom. They need to start scoring goals and getting points. And yeah, Yokohama FC, you know, they're the leaders and they're on three straight 1-0 wins. But Yamaguchi are not not as bad, I don't think, as the table makes them look sometimes. So I think that'll be a tough match for Yokohama FC as well. And I don't know, I think Kanazawa against Tokyo Verde and Tokushima Kofu, you watch Kanazawa and Kofu the weekend, so I'll leave those for you.
Yeah, well, Kanazawa finally put in a decent performance and now they're playing against a team that hasn't scored for four games. So I think we all know what's going to happen there. I expect that goalless run to end. But hopefully, Kanazawa will be able to keep the good performances going and win a game at home. That would be lovely. Hasn't happened for quite a long time. And yeah, Tokushima Kofu, they're both just about keeping their playoff hopes alive. Tokushima suddenly started winning. That's out of nowhere. And yeah, Kofu are on a run of four draws, but it's not out of the question that either of those could make the top six. But if they do draw, as they are both quite likely to do, then I think that will be it for them, won't it? But yeah, and in terms of Yamagata, they just had the weekend's match was postponed, wasn't it? Because they had COVID. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of team they can put out against Iwate. I mean, if everyone's recovered or if they have to, they play the game but they don't have everyone back, that might give Iwate a chance. I don't know. But even Yamagata's second string is probably pretty good. All right, let's move on. Sunday. There are three games on Sunday. At 6 o'clock, Tochigi play Gunma. And then at 7 o'clock, Okayama face Machida and Kumamoto play Omiya. John, what about those games?
Well, I think these games are all pretty big, aren't they, for various reasons. I think Tochigi against Gunma is a, you know, Siri, what does an archetypal J2 fixture look like kind of vibe. And Tochigi have been going quite well recently and actually scoring more goals than you'd expect. So I think Gunma will have to be on it, won't they? We talked about them in part one and said they need to either try and stop conceding the first goal or at least react a bit better and get back into games themselves. So I think what would make that game most interesting, if Gunma score first, because that'd be a really kind of unusual situation for them to be in, 1-0 up in an away game. And they were able to hold on, weren't they, and get the win at Yamagata a couple of rounds ago. So would they be able to replicate that, or would Tochigi come back? It's going to be interesting. I think Okayama against Machida is probably the pick of the weekend games. To be honest, because, you know, it's fourth versus sixth, or by the time it happens, it could be third versus sixth. Okayama, tough nut to crack, as we know, very strong defensively, good going forward, good all-round team. Machida, all the pieces of the puzzle are there, but they don't always click together. It isn't always as smooth as it should be. And Ranko Popovic was not particularly happy after the defeat against Yokohama City at the weekend. I couldn't follow. I think he was, I'm not sure what language he was speaking. I know he speaks loads, but he was very, very animated in his post-match interview, but I couldn't follow. I worked out that he was angry. I couldn't work out whether he was angry with his own players or the referee or Yokohama FC or perhaps just life in general after the game. But I think, you know, Machida will be trying to give him a positive reaction in that game. I think that could be an absolute cracker, to be honest, Okayama against Machida. And Kumamoto, Omiya, well, Omiya we haven't talked about. They've been kind of out of sight, out of mind, haven't they? Because they've had postponements with COVID as well recently. But Kumamoto, yeah, they're high up in the table. We know they're a good side, but they're not great at home. They haven't had a particularly good home result. And I believe, I don't know if there's any update on this, but Toshiki Takahashi, you know, talismanic number nine at the top of the sort of Christmas tree formation, he had to go off injured in the Verde game at the weekend with what looked like maybe a broken rib or fractured rib in a challenge with the Verde goalkeeper. So I don't expect, judging by how he was stretched off, he was fine, you know, but I doubt he'll be available for that Omiya game. So that adds an interesting layer to that game as well. What about you, James?
Well, I think Tochigi Gunma looks particularly interesting for me, because if Tochigi wins, surely they'll be safe. I think that would put them on 41 points, and that would leave Gunma still in a world of trouble. Whereas if Gunma win, that means that Tochigi are not quite out of trouble yet, but it also means that Gumma have dragged all the other teams back into trouble as well by putting pressure on them. So I think that would be very interesting. Plus, Tochigi had a week off because of a postponement. Yeah, I agree with your thoughts on Okayama Machida and Kumamoto Omiya. I think Omiya, they've had a week off as well, haven't they? So hopefully they should be fresh and ready to go. Whereas Kumamoto, they're very good. They're kind of having slightly dodgy form recently. I mean, two losses and a draw in their last five. It's not bad, but it's not as good as they were slightly earlier in the year. They're still in fifth, but I think that there's a lot of intriguing matches coming up, and because every team's still got something to play for, I think we should have plenty of stuff to talk about next week. Yes. All right. Thanks, John, for all your thoughts. It's always interesting to hear what you think about the J2 action.
Oh, and not a problem. Yeah, apologies if there was a lot of background noise on my microphone this week, because we're recording in the morning. We've had the rubbish collection, garbage collection came through. Cicadas very noisy today, and low flying helicopter as well. So the FBI have finally found me, unfortunately. But sorry about the background noise if there was any.
Right. That's I hadn't noticed it, but maybe the listeners will pick it up. Okay. So thanks, John. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for everyone who supports us on Patreon. We really appreciate the money that you pledge to help keep Big Pod and Extra Time going. And don't go anywhere, because here comes Magic Mike Innes with all the latest from J3 in J Talk Short Corner. J Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on the fixtures in Round 22 and the midweek catch-up game, as well as previewing the Round 23 matches coming up this weekend. First, a few items of J3 news since the last pod. Azul Claro Numazu have become the fifth J3 club this season to announce a change of coach, with the dismissal of Masataka Imai. The 63-year-old was in his third season at Numazu, who currently sit 11th in the table, which, bearing in mind the pre-season predictions of many, looks a pretty decent showing. But they do struggle away from home, and between the shock departure to Fujieda My FC of star striker Ryo Watanabe and the sacking of Imai, Numazu lost four straight games, scoring only twice. The club have appointed as caretaker head of scouting Kazuhito Mochizuki, coach during their first season in the JFL back in 2014, and someone who has also been in charge at Vanarale Hachinohe and Kamatamari Sanuki. Staying at Numazu, their postponed Round 20 game at home to Fujieda has been rescheduled for the afternoon of Wednesday the 21st of September, and another rescheduled fixture is the abandoned Round 21 match between Gifu and Fujieda, which will play to completion on Wednesday the 14th of September, starting in the 22nd minute with the scoreline at Gifu 0, Fujieda 1. Meanwhile, Matsumoto Yamaga have signed Vanfore Corfu attacking midfielder Riku Nakayama on loan until the end of the season. Nakayama, who's 21, spent the latter half of last season loaned to Katari Toyama, but back at Corfu this year has seen his opportunities limited. And AC Nagano Parseiro have signed veteran centre-back Daichi Inui, unregistered since being released by Matsumoto at the end of 2021. Inui brings experience from the likes of Zaspa Kusatsu Gunma, Vivara Nagasaki and Tochigi SC. Kagoshima United say fullback Mikiya Eto has ruptured his Achilles for the second time this year. The former Ruasto Kumamoto player was originally injured in pre-season, and this latest incident in training is expected to mean he'll miss a total of 12 months of football. Finally, the J-League have announced an overhaul to their end-of-season awards provision, which means, for the first time, there will be prizes for the J3 Player of the Year, Goal of the Season and Best 11. The J3 ceremony will be held on Monday, the 21st of November, the day after the last game of the season. Now on to the action and the round 22 fixtures. There were six games on Saturday, the 27th of August, and there's only one place to start. That's with J3 leaders Iwaki FC and their destruction of promotion hopefuls Fujieda My FC at Fujieda Sports Park. Thanks to a break in the league schedule, a postponement and an abandonment, the home side were playing their first competitive match for 4 weeks. Less than ideal preparation for a game against probably the most dynamic team in the division. And My FC could see what they were up against when they fell behind in only the fourth minute. Yuto Yamashita playing in a corner to the far post, where Misaru Hidaka was left unmarked to finish past the exposed Kei Uchiyama. By the 20th minute, it was pretty much game over, as it was then that Iwaki's Eiji Miyamoto sent a high punt down the left. Shota Suzuki ran onto it, leaving Keisuke Ogasawara in his wake, and struck a snap volley that looped over Uchiyama and in. When one remembers Fujieda came into the game as the second top goal scorers in the division, behind, of course, Iwaki, it's startling how easily they were then kept at arm's length, failing to create a serious scoring opportunity in the whole of the match. Indeed, the shot count on the J-League website records 19 for Iwaki and just 1 for My FC. Early in the second half, Hiroto Iwabuchi hit the post from close range as the visitors pushed for a third, which eventually came with 11 minutes left. Daiki Yamaguchi heading a high ball back across the face of goal, Kaina Tanimura having his attempt blocked, and centre-back Ryo Endo lashing in the loose ball. Final score, Fujieda 0, Iwaki 3. My FC, unlucky to have come into one of their toughest and most important games of the season, lacking competitive match play, and their six-game winning run was brought to an abrupt halt. Iwaki, unbeaten in 8, have scored 12 in the last 3 games, and most significantly of all, are now 4 points clear at the top of the table. Among Iwaki's nearest challengers, Matsumoto Yamaga scrapped out a rather less clear-cut home win over a hard-working Kamatamari Sanuki. Ayumu Yokoyama was the key man for Matsumoto, a thorn in the side of Sanuki defender Genichi Endo, hitting the post after a surging run in the 19th minute and going close on numerous other occasions. Yokoyama made the breakthrough 10 minutes before half-time, latching onto a high ball over the top from Yusuke Kikui, getting to it before both Endo and keeper Takuya Takahashi and steering the ball into the unguarded net. Kamatamari had their own flair player in Ikki Kawasaki, who had a shot well saved by Victor and a follow-up effort cleared off the line, but it ended Matsumoto 1, Sanuki 0. It's only the points that matter now for Yamaga, and they hold on to third. With a performance like this, Kamatamari would have got something against most other teams in the division, but they now have a single point from the last 7 games. Matsumoto might have ground out a win, but just behind them in the table, Katare Toyama suffered a major blow to their promotion hopes at Gainare Tottori. The home side took the lead 10 minutes in when, out of nowhere, Naoya Seno unleashed a 30-yard shot with his right foot that flew inside the post, giving Genki Yamada no chance. Throughout the rest of the first half, Yamada kept Toyama in the game with a string of good saves, but 8 minutes after the restart, Taiki Arai's 15-yard shot sneaked inside the post and Tottori were 2 ahead. Gainare survived an almighty goalmouth scramble and a shot from Hiroyasu Eki that clipped the outside of the post as Katare tried to get back in the game, but Tottori confirmed their third win in 4 matches in injury time when Daichi Ishikawa's 20-yard shot deflected off Uryuya Ohata and looped over the stranded Yamada. Final score, Tottori 3, Toyama 0. Gainare lived dangerously at times, but have shown throughout the season they do have the attacking quality to cause teams problems. Qatari have sometimes lacked consistency, but rarely have they looked as underwhelming as this. A draw between Ehime FC and FC Gifu wasn't much help to either side. Ehime going in front via Kohei Shin's acrobatic volley from a Takashi Kondo cross in the 10th minute. Gifu equalising 11 minutes before the break when they got lucky with a rebound off Ehime's Asahiyada, which saw the ball bounce back into the danger area. Junya Tanaka reacting quickly to set up Ryo Kubota, who bundled it over the line. Tanaka hit the bar with a header in first half stoppage time, and in the 63rd minute, Ehime's Takumi Sasaki struck the outside of the post with a low shot from fully 50 yards, but it ended Ehime 1, Gifu 1. The Mighty Mikan's hopes of promotion hit by the fact they've only picked up a single point in the last two games. Gifu still stuck just below halfway. Azul Claro Numazu against SC Sagamihana constituted a first game in charge for Numazu caretaker coach Kazuhito Mochizuki, who gave a first pro start to 18-year-old Haruki Toyama in attacking midfield. But it was Sagamihana who took the lead in only the 11th minute, and they did it in some style, Jungo Fujimoto throwing a casual dummy to let Kensei Nakashima's diagonal ball roll on for Yuan Matsuhashi, who skipped round keeper Masataka Nomura and slid it into an empty net. Fujimoto almost made it 2-0 only 2 minutes later, an audacious curler with the outside of his right boot beating Nomura but hitting the post and bouncing away. It was the teenager Toyama who 9 minutes into the second half played a key role in getting Numazu back into the game, racing to reach a near post corner and deflect it back to Tatsuya Anzai, hurtling into space on the edge of the box to strike it left-footed past Kentaro Kakoi. If Azul Claro score a better worked goal than that this season, I'll be happy to see it. Only 5 minutes later, Fujimoto had a penalty saved by Nomura, and the most notable aspect of the closing stages was a late cameo appearance by 47-year-old Teruyoshi Ito for the home side. Final score, Numazu 1, Sagamihana 1. Mochizuki at least brought Azul Claro's losing streak to an end, with Toyama providing some much-needed energy up front. Sagamihana stay in the bottom four. Also on Saturday was a Tohoku derby between Fukushima United and Vanrari Hachinohe, played out in the rain at the Toho no Minna Stadium. The home side won it via the only goal on 38 minutes when Riku Hashimoto floated a corner to the far post. Vanrari defender Kordai Fuji got his head to it, only for Hikaru Arai to hammer in a half volley. The closest Hachinohe came to an equaliser was when Ryo Watanabe found himself in space 8 yards out, but his angled shot was blocked by Kaito Yamamoto. Final score, Fukushima 1, Hachinohe 0. Fukushima rather playing out the season in mid-table. Vanrare in the bottom three. The other three matches in round 22 were on Sunday the 28th, and one of them, Kagoshima United against FC Imabari, was a contender for J3 Game of the Season. For an away fixture against the team standing second in the division, a major COVID outbreak meant Imabari boss Kazuaki Hashikawa was forced into 8 changes to the starting lineup and named only 4 substitutes, including one 17-year-old and one 16-year-old. This makeshift side put on an extraordinary performance that may turn out to have a major impact on the promotion race. Imabari took the lead midway through the first half. Wakaba Shimoguchi playing a long ball forward to find Marcus Indio in space. Kagoshima's Kenya Onodera did little to close his man down, and Indio slipped a left foot shot inside the far post. 8 minutes later, it was 2-0. Stand-in midfielder Park Subin lofting it into the box for Indio to drift between Onodera and Atsuki Satsukawa and glance in the header. Within 2 minutes, Kagoshima had pulled one back, Frank Romero slotting a clever pass through the heart of the defence for Corky Arita to score from 10 yards. Not that the first half action ended there, far from it, as on 35 minutes, Marcus Indio claimed his hat-trick. 20-year-old J-League debutant Haruki Matsui battling to get the better of both Onodera and Takumi Yamaguchi, the loose ball falling to the Brazilian who moved forward and fired past Fuma Shirasaka from 25 yards. Onodera did manage to make a more positive contribution to the Kagoshima cause 4 minutes before the break, getting on the end of a high free kick and sending a header over visiting keeper Shinji Okada to drop inside the far post. Half-time score, Kagoshima 2, Imabari 3, and the question was whether Naoto Otake's home team could regroup and go on to take something from the game. Answer: no, for in the 53rd minute, Onodera was caught in possession by Kazaki Nakagawa, who out-sprinted the defender and confidently chipped Shirasaka to make it 4-2. The Smoking Volcano's much-missed Rei Yonezawa pulled one back with a powerful header to round off a well-worked corner routine with 18 minutes to go. But after that, there was no further scoring, and the game ended instead with both sides seeing players red-carded in injury time. First, Kagoshima veteran Yuji Kimura, then Imabari's hat-trick hero Marcus Indio. Final score, Kagoshima 3, Imabari 4. A dramatic match that means Kagoshima remain second in the table only on goal difference and are only 3 points ahead of Imabari, whose 10-game unbeaten run has now taken them to fourth. Desperately hanging on to the fringes of the promotion race are AC Nagano Parseiro, who after last week's shock defeat at Hachinohe had a must-win home game against Giravance Kitakyushu, and when they did, having much the better of things against a lacklustre Kitakyushu, although Parseiro only found the net once in spite of all their half chances. Hiroki Yamamoto came close when, just before half-time, he hit the post after good work by Masaki Miyasaka. But the goal came from Yamamoto in the 52nd minute, a far-post header after Carlos Duke had pulled back across from the byline. Giramance did perk up after they'd gone behind, but rarely threatened Issei Oichi's goal. Final score, Nagano 1, Kitakyushu 0. Parseiro moved back into the top six for the first time since May. Giramance drop into the bottom six, three straight 1-0 losses. And finally for round 22, Wooden Spooners YSCC Yokohama were going for a third win in a row as they travelled to Tegevajano Miyazaki without a victory since round 11. Tegevajano coach Yasushi Takasaki gave a pro debut to rookie Junpei Tanaka at right back, and Tanaka wrote his name in lights a couple of minutes before half-time when in Miyazaki's first real attack worthy of the name, Yuki Okada set him up and the 22-year-old hit a stunning shot from the edge of the box that gave YFCC keeper Ryo Ishii absolutely no chance. Little other goalmouth action in this one. Final score, Miyazaki 1, YFCC 0. Tegevajano break their winless streak at last, thanks not to a strong team display, but a sensational piece of individual skill. YSCC didn't appear to turn up and so miss the chance to close the gap on the teams above them. A quick mention of the rescheduled Round 20 game that took place on Tuesday the 30th of August, Sagamihana against Fukushima. It was a comfortable win for the visitors who in tricky conditions had the better of the first half but had to wait until 30 seconds after the restart to take the lead. Hiroki Higuchi's pass freeing up substitute Shoki Nagano to evade with some panache Hiroki Mizumoto and Yudai Fujiwara to score from 10 yards. The Fukushima advantage lasted until the 62nd minute, neither Hiroto Morooka or Hiroto Yukie doing enough to prevent Tsubasa Ando from getting on the end of a high cross and heading past Kaito Yamamoto. But Toshihiro Hattori's side were still able to make their superiority count, scoring two goals in the last 9 minutes to take the game. Fukushima regained the advantage from the penalty spot, Kosuke Tanaka brought down by Ando and Kota Mori converting, and then sealed the win with an elegant chip over the keeper by Ibrahim Junior Kuribara, following a beautiful through pass by Mori. Final score, Sagamihara 1, Fukushima 3. Sagamihara now 5 without a victory for Fukushima, their first away win since May. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 22, noting that Fujieda have 2 games in hand, Gifu and Numazu have 1. The top 6 teams are Iwaki with 48 points, Kagoshima and Matsumoto have 44, then it's Imabari with 41, Toyama and Nagano both with 39. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are Sagamihara and Hachinohe with 19 points, Sanuki 18, and bottom with 14, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 23 fixtures over the weekend, when there are 7 games on Saturday the 3rd of September. Leaders Iwaki are starting to look unstoppable, but a team that has a reason to try are visitors Nagano. Kagoshima need to bounce back after their round 22 loss. They go to Numazu. Nothing else but a victory will do for third place Matsumoto either. They're at home to Ehime. Hard to see how Toyama might sustain a promotion challenge if they can't win at home to Fukushima. And elsewhere, Gifu host YSCC, Sagamihara are at home to Tottori, and Miyazaki make the long journey north to Hachinohe. The other 2 matches are on Sunday the 4th. Waiting in the wings for a slip-up by Kagoshima or Matsumoto are Imabari at home to Kitakyushu. And finally, can Fujieda reassert their promotion credentials with a trip to Sanuki? With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.